You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Headset sounds weird, so that ain't good. Now it sounds better. So good morning on a Monday, the 7th day of October. Disturbing news from, the Pentagon? I don't know, but it seems like people are surprised about what we're doing in northern Syria. And I don't mean news people, I mean operational people. So, what the fuck, over? I mean, the gong show that is the White House that we know and accept, is spreading to this kind of stuff. Come on! So, we'll see where that goes today. But, I have to tell you, I had an awesome weekend. Yeah, better than awesome. First of all, which is odd for me to say that because I did accounting for most of the weekend. Now, let me just tell you about me and accounting. Accounting and I have a history. It's not a good one either. Right? Things that involve memorizing rules and then regurgitating them, I never excelled at in my life. Geometry. Let's memorize rules about angles and then let's regurgitate them. I did not like geometry. Right? Accounting. Let's memorize a shit ton of rules and then we'll, regurgitate them and you can know where everything goes and blah, blah, blah. I was not a big fan of accounting. And so I took accounting one when I was a freshman in college and muddled my way through. I did not take accounting two, which was a mistake until I was a senior. All right. And so, that did not work out very well. My cousin, who's an accounting genius, who's a CPA, and he's a big-time accountant guy. He got a 99 on the midterm. Yeah, there were two tests, a midterm and a final. So he gets a 99. The guy took 1 point off for spelling because he said he'd never given 100 in his life, which was bullshit, right? Anyway, I, on the same test, got a 54. So the McNamara family, we bracketed the grade spectrum of accounting, too. So anyhow, I think I ultimately went and begged for him not to give me a D plus or something like that. Give me a C minus. I can't graduate with a D in my major. Please, please, let me get on my knees and beg you. Please. I promise I'm not going to go into accounting. I won't ever do this again. So anyway, so given the fact that I spent the weekend doing accounting, and like a lot of last week I've been doing accounting stuff, it's a miracle that I had a great weekend, but I did. First of all, you're going to hear part of it this morning. You're going to hear an interview from somebody that I've talked about on this program for since I met him in January. His name is Matt Kiker. And you're going to hear him today. And it's one of the best interviews I've ever done in my life. And it is that way because of his just candor about his life. And you're going to hear his story. And it's an amazing story. And Matt and I recorded this Saturday morning. So got up Saturday and did that. And again, make sure you stop whatever you're doing. In about 53, 58 minutes from now, and listen to that interview. I do a lot of interviews. I like most of what I do, but this is exceptional. His story is exceptional, and I would tell you that listen to it. The next thing I will tell you is what I did that day. All right. I then went down. I got to read you a couple of emails, too. One about China that somebody was listening. And kind of another interesting perspective. And then another, this email, as I'm finishing up the interview with Matt, and it's an awesome interview, right? So, and it goes for about an hour and a half or whatever. This pops into my box. And it's entitled "The Power of All-Marine Radio and the Message of Post-Traumatic Winning." This is from Anthony. I hope this reaches you well, Mac. My name is Anthony. I've been listening to your podcast after stumbling around various military-related podcasts, and I have to say, you become a daily aspect of my life. I've been in the funk for the last few years after being discharged from the Marine Corps for allergies before I could even get my career started. I'm currently trying to get back in because I feel the Marine Corps deserves those who want to serve to carry on the legacy. Listening to the stories that you bring on the show about the Marines from Camp Lejeune, Second Maw, and Quantico is a testament to the power of post-traumatic winning. I've been talking about post-traumatic winning at work, home, and with friends throughout the country. One of my closest friends was a part of the squadron that lost the KC-130J. He was slated to go to Cherry Point or Japan. He didn't want to take any chances, so he got out, and his friends went over. My most recent conversation was with a master sergeant in the Air Force, trying to provide a rundown of the program and what I have been able to bring from the program. Through listening to you in your series on discipline, I was able to talk with the master sergeant about issues that he may experience in a squadron. Acting as a conduit for your message, lessons, and creating joy from trauma, the master sergeant replied, quote, "Dude, with stuff that powerful, I'm half tempted to bring you out here and spread the word. Keep creating joy." Anthony, from Wilson, North Carolina. 45 miles east of Raleigh, 91.8 miles north-northwest of Camp Lejeune. That son of a bitch drops into my lap. So and I'm still on the phone with Matt Kiker. And I said, "Hey Matt, listen to this." And I read him the email and he's like, "Shit." He goes, "Mac, this is awesome." And so so that happened to me. I then I had already showered, so I got my shit ready, and I was going down to Camp Pendleton to do a kind of a little post-traumatic winning talk at an event that alumni of 1st Battalion 9th Marines, the original Walking Dead, that they were having at Camp Pendleton. They were doing a hike, and then they were going to hang out all day, and they were going to have a auction. So I was going to go down there. So I got down there and Rich Garcia and Ronnie Reyes. Rich is a former U.S. Navy corpsman, Marine Desert Storm guy. And so I get down there, and it's kind of a party going on, and it's a pretty good time. I mean, and you have guys on active duty that are over there, and they've redone what used to be kind of the E-Club at Camp Horno, aboard Camp Pendleton. It's beautiful, man. TVs all over the place, an area out back where you can sit and in the sun with umbrellas, TVs out there, kitchen area, serving area, a computer kind of area, and really cool place. So anyway, I'm there. But I get there, and I look around. I'm like, this is not really the atmosphere for post-traumatic winning. Now, I got to go find Rich. Rich has hurt himself, I guess, during the hike. So he's sitting in a chair with ice on his ankle. I'm like, typical Navy guy. Probably had to carry his ass up to the top of the hill. What the hell? So anyway, he's talking, I meet his wife, and just lovely people. And if you can imagine, the atmosphere is pretty fun because, you know, everybody happy to see each other and be in each other's company. And these are all a lot of 1-9 alumni guys, man. Some from Vietnam, some from the 80s, and you could tell because some guys wore parts of uniforms. Yeah, so you could tell by the different camouflage patterns when they were in the Marine Corps. And some had kids with them, some had, you know, their spouses with them. So it's just cool. But I told Rich, I said, hey, man, I don't know if this is, like, the right forum for this. Because, you know, the message is pretty heavy. And it's not kind of like, hey, let me hop on the PA and give you 5 minutes of post-traumatic winning. You know? And he goes, so anyway, Rich was like, we went back and forth. He goes, hey, whatever you want to do, Mac. He said, so anyway, I didn't do it, but what I did get a chance to do is I got a chance to meet, Jacob Wright. I met him via his, company commander, and he's telling me about, he goes, hey, this guy does nothing but help other Marines. And he's lived the whole post-traumatic winning thing. And at some point you'll meet, Jacob Wright. And, just a good dude, man. Just a good dude. So I got a chance to hang out with him, shoot the shit with him about what he's been through, about post-traumatic winning. And so then he was going to go surfing. So he was going to actually introduce it on Saturday, but he'll do that when I do it at Camp Pendleton. I don't know, maybe this week, because I'm doing it down there this week. So I did that. And then I'm standing there talking to Jacob Wright and, Willie Buell, battalion commander from 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines, Battle of Fallujah, who I know. So he walks in. So pretty interesting cast. So as I'm talking to Jacob Wright, I'm standing there shooting the shit. Rich Garcia sitting there. All these people all over the place. Ronnie Reyes walked up, and I got a chance to meet Ronnie's fiance and her daughter, and just wonderful people. And so we get a chance to meet his family. That was cool. And then he hands me this jar, this small glass jar. And I look at him, and he says, that's the caisson dirt that I owe you. And so, yeah. Valhalla ground, right? Sacred ground. So I'll give you the background on this. When I met, I went to dinner a week ago, not last Friday, but the Friday before, with Ronnie, who set it up, and Richard Garcia. And so that's where I met Richard Garcia. So we're sitting at dinner, and we're just kind of get started, and Ronnie says, oh, hold on. And he pulls out this container of dirt. And I'm sitting across the table from Ronnie, Richard sitting to my right across the table. And he hands it to Richard. He goes, there you go, bud. And I said, what's that? And he said, it's caisson dirt. It's caisson dirt. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, what am I, like chopped liver sitting here? I'm like, Reyes, like, are you kidding me? And he's like, he starts laughing, goes, fuck. I said, you just gave a squid caisson dirt in front of me. Like, do you want me to stab you? Now I'm looking, like, around for something to stab Ronnie Reyes with. I'm like, this is going to be a short relationship. He's like, I promise I'll bring you some. I'll get you some. I brought some back. I promise, man. I'm like, well, God damn it, man. What kind of craziness is this? The squid gets caisson dirt. I get shit. I get chicken enchiladas, which weren't bad, but that was not like caisson dirt. Caisson is Valhalla, man. That's like sacred turf for Marine Corps. So anyway, he hands me this, man, and I was so excited. Like what? Like, this is the ground, man. This is the ground where, you know, Ken Rogers, that you've met, you've heard on the show, man. This is where these guys did their shit. So it sits right here now. Caisson. I got a little bit of black sand from Iwo Jima, but a friend of mine, Duffy White, who's been on the program. I was talking to Duffy on Saturday night. I told him about it. He goes, hey, do you have any dirt from Iwo Jima? Any sand? And I was like, well, I have a little thing in that frame thing. He goes, no, I'll send you some. So, yeah, my dirt collection. And I've got a piece from a wood from Bellu Wood sitting here on my desk, too. Exactamundo. So like, now I'm, like, happy as shit. So I come home. And well, I got to tell you one more story, and this is a disturbing story. So I'm talking to somebody down there, and we're talking about leadership, and it's one of the things that, you know, he had seen post-traumatic winning. He said, you know, one of the things that you hit on is this disconnected way we exist now. But he said, I don't think most people realize how disconnected it is. And, you know, it is the leadership fight in the Marine Corps. I don't think most people understand how fucked up the military is. Right? That's my conclusion as I continue to roll down this road. And let me, and you can understand it from this perspective, right? If you've been in high school within the last 10 years and you joined the military, you've drugged that skewed way that you grew up into the military. Don't want to intrude, just do what you want to do, that kind of bullshit existence. And you've drug it into the United States military. That's not how it can work. This thing isn't a freestyle event. This thing's a team event. And one of the things that you realize the more people you talk to is they don't know how to be on a team. My concept of what a team is and their concept of what a team is are two totally different things. Right? So you can be on a team, blah, blah, blah. They might nod their head. But they don't know how to be on a team. The world that they grew up in, you know, is vastly different, and the teams they play on and the way they played on them was vastly different than what I grew up in and what my culture emphasized. And the Marine Corps has to change that. And so let me give you the story. So tell me a story there. they had a suicide problem in their unit. So it was decided that we're going to spend time together as a body of people, a battalion of Marines, probably 900 to 1,000 people, human beings. We're going to spend time together. And we're going to play sports for a week. And so after about the third day, right, the guy's talking to Marines, and, you know, he said, you could tell the difference. It was amazing. And we just played sports all day. We're on the football field. We're on the baseball field. We're in the gym. All we're doing is competing. People screaming and yelling, laughing, back slapping, you know. And so he said, I'm talking to junior Marines. And they're like, and he said, what do you think of this? And he said, the junior Marines looked at him and said, this is awesome. Never done anything like this before. And he said, yeah, he said, neither have I, and I've been in this thing for a long time. And so he asked them, what do you think's the best part about it? And they said, well, you know, we're talking to, you know, senior people for the first time. They've really spoken to us. And he's like, oh, that's awesome. He said, like who? And he said, now I was expecting to say company commander, first sergeant, right, battalion staff people. And they looked at him and said, well, you know, like senior lance corporals and stuff like that. And his response was, what? And they just looked at him like, what? He's like, they don't talk to you? Well, not really. I mean, we're not in with them. And he said, that's how, and so he told me, he said, that's how fucked up it is. We went from a squad bay where everybody lived together, everybody interacted, right, in this close organization, to now we're so stratified that the senior lance corporals don't talk to junior Marines in the unit. It's about being on a team. It's about loving them, caring about them, and making them better from day fucking one. Not this bullshit that, oh, I'm senior to you. And he said, I was stunned. But that's how deep the problem is in the United States Marine Corps right now. And if it's that deep in this service, what's it like in the rest of the services? Yeah, so it's pretty stunning. Pretty stunning. But let me tell you another thing that happened to me down there. So you're standing around and you're seeing Vietnam era guys, right? Now they're in there. So if you were 20, I'll make the math easy. If you were 20 in 1970, all right, so 30 years to 2000, and then another 19. So let's say 50. You're 50 years away from Vietnam. So if you were 20 in 1970, right, that means you were 18 in 1968, which is what Ken Rogers was. So add 50 years to that. You're 70 years old now. So you're somewhere between 70 and 80, I would say. The majority of those guys are between 70 and 80. So they're there. You see some of the T-shirts they wear. Right? Kantian, Kaysan. I mean, 1-9 is one of the most storied battalions of the Vietnam War. I mean, when the worst battles Marine Corps fought in, 1-9 was in the middle of them. Right? And the whole, if you want to read the story of the Walking Dead, read about 1-9. So I meet some of those guys, and we start talking. And so you're going to meet some of them. You're going to meet some of them. The one other guy I met, Ronnie Reyes, takes me to meet. Well, I have his card someplace. He takes me to meet. I met Doc Fink, right? Who's one of the corps. I met a couple of corpsmen from 1-9, right? I met Rick Garcia, Okay. Now, Rick Garcia, he was with Ronnie's dad when he was killed. Ronnie's dad was Rick Garcia, one of Rick Garcia's best friends. Pretty cool stuff. And so he takes me over to meet Rick Garcia. So I meet Rick Garcia, and so he didn't know Ronnie Reyes even existed, right? Till Ronnie found him. But Rick Garcia, he named his oldest son, right, after Ronnie Reyes. So he doesn't even know Ron Jr., or he's not a junior, but he doesn't know that Ronnie even exists. And then they meet. And Rick, Rick, what did he do? Oh, he goes to the Vietnam Wall every year just to see Ronnie Reyes, his friend. So I mean, there's just these incredible stories, and you'll meet Rich Garcia. A lot of Riches, man. A lot of Hispanic guys down there. It was an awesome Saturday. Full of interesting discussions and whatnot. The other thing that I have to read you is I have to read you an email I got from somebody on Saturday. But before I do that, Jack Keane is on Fox News right now. And let me rewind it until he comes on. And he's talking about American troops getting out of northern Syria. And I'll be curious to hear what he has to say. Now, look, if that's the president's decision, there's a way to go about doing that. But it sounds like, what it sounds like this morning is that people were surprised by that. And that's bullshit. Right? That's not the way the United States should conduct business. Right? The way we should do it is there should be this stability, this steady hand, this responsible behavior. And even when a new administration comes in and says, hey, we're going to change course. I mean, nobody should look at us and say, yeah, nobody who calls themselves a friend of ours or an ally of ours should look at us and say, yeah, we were surprised by that. So let me just tee this up, right? And this happened.
Troops out of northeastern Syria.
This happened just moments ago.
Will soon invade and take control of the captured ISIS fighters there. U.S. officials telling Fox News the Pentagon was blindsided by the move. The White House facing backlash. I'm going to bring in retired four-star General Jack Keane. And sir, good morning to you. The president's tweeting on this as well. I'll bring you that in a moment. Did you see this coming, General?
No, not at all. I mean, there was serious negotiations going on in terms of how to establish this safe zone. The Turks wanted 30 kilometers, the Kurds wanted 5. We were doing joint patrols together. The Kurds were removing fortifications. This process was not going as fast as Erdogan wanted. I believe he's thrown his weight around here, clearly with the White House and the administration, to make this process go faster. And obviously, he's going to make it go very quick now, okay. given what he's doing.
Do you support this move or not, sir?
No. There's one word that describes this for me, betrayal. And I think it's a strategic blunder that will have significant implications. Just hold on to this thought for a second. We went into eastern Syria to defeat ISIS. The Syrian Democratic Forces, which the Kurds were a part of, had 60,000 ground troops. We provided 2,000 to help them. It took us 2 years. We fought every single day to defeat ISIS. The Syrian Kurds, who we're talking about here, lost over 11,000 in that fight. And now we're trying to keep our foot on their throats so they don't reemerge again in eastern Syria, and they're already showing some activity.
Okay,
how can we possibly walk away from them?
Yeah, I just don't mean to interrupt. Here is a tweet just seconds ago. Okay, the president writes, "I was elected on getting us out of these ridiculous endless wars where our great military functions as a policing operation to the benefit of people who don't even like the USA. The two most unhappy countries at this move are Russia and China because they love seeing us bogged down, watching over a quagmire and spending big dollars to do so. When I took over, our military was totally depleted. Now it's stronger than ever before. The endless and ridiculous wars are ending." All caps. "We will be focused on the big picture, knowing we can always go back and blast." End tweet. Jenna will react to that.
Well, I understand about endless wars, but this is not about a war. This is about how do you manage the peace? How do you manage post conflict? That's what this issue is. We have two national interests there. One, do not permit ISIS to reemerge. That's number one. And two, do not permit Iran to take over all of Syria and therefore be able to encroach on Israel. Listen, wars have endings, clearly, but it's the peace you have to put as much effort into winning as well. Look what happened when we pulled out of Iraq. We won the war there. Bush handed a victory to President Obama. Obama walked away because he was fed up with it. Much as you see sentiments here being registered. And guess what? We lost that peace, and we found ourselves embroiled in a much larger conflict after that.
Okay,
that was tragic.
Two specific questions on this. What do you anticipate to be the fallout from this decision?
Well, if this stands as it is, the Syrian Kurds will have no choice. Think about this. Here comes the Turkish proxies followed by artillery and air power. How are they going to defend themselves? The United States has already said, we're not going to do it. They'll go to the Assad regime, and they'll get Russian air power, Iranian proxies, and pro-regime forces to defend them. And then what? Then the Russians and the Iranians will own eastern Syria. That's what we are giving up here after we fought so hard to stabilize this situation.
So why do you why do you then think that he made this decision? I just read off the tweets. His explanations are that we get in these things, we never get out of them. How do you respond to that from the military standpoint, General?
I take it at face value what his motivation is. He's frustrated by being involved in these things, and in his mind they seem to be endless. But foreign policy and international relations, they're challenging, and they're at times very messy, and they're certainly complicated. Look, we stayed post-World War II in Europe as a complicated situation with the Soviet Union. We're still in Korea with our troops as a complicated situation. Post-conflict, it takes presence and it takes involvement to make certain things don't get worse as a result of your decisions, which I think is the danger here.
General, thank you so much. Let's
Jack Keane, moments ago on Fox News with Bill Hemmer. The clown move, right? Clown move. It, as we talk about on the program, the importance of winning the peace, right? Your contribution to it is relatively small, a couple thousand, okay? And so this whole notion that we're going to go someplace, we're going to do something, and then we're just going to walk away from it within a relatively short period of time is just so fucking stupid, right? Just so fucking stupid. And then if you're going to leave, there's a way to do it. And to have people say, I was blindsided, or allies say, we didn't know. I mean, what the fuck, honestly? You know, and again, keep the shit show on that side of the Potomac, right? With all you political assholes, stay on that side of Potomac. Right? Do not go on the Virginia side of the Potomac, right, where the Pentagon is. That needs to be smart, deliberate, and well thought. Fucking joke, man. The clown show crosses the Potomac. Nice. Okay. I had one more thing that I wanted to talk about. Oh no, so you're gonna hear about Kantian. So, I mean, when you follow 1-9, or in Vietnam, 1967, 68, 69, I mean, every fucking big fight the Marine Corps gets in, you know, with the exception of Hawaii City, 1-9's a part of. And it's pretty amazing. And so you talk to these guys and, you know, and they did, you know, things like Operation Buffalo, which was a movement to contact in the DMZ, north of Cantien. Holy shit, man. Yeah. The NVA shooting artillery, you know, I mean, it was on, you know, two ground forces. And so, anyway, you're going to hear from these guys in the next few weeks, the next couple months, whatnot. So, cool stuff. Let me read you one more email. Yeah, too much show, man. Too much show. So, this showed up. When the hell is it? He even got my rank right. Saturday morning, right? Yeah, Saturday evening. Let me read this to you. Dear Major McNamara, I am neither a Marine nor an American, but I listen to your podcast with great interest recently, and it's great to hear that the defense community is aware of and is rising to the challenge of an increasing belligerent China. On the other hand, as a Taiwanese Canadian who regularly keeps up on local news, and he's talking about Taiwan, and has many friends and family in the country of my birth, I felt a need to correct some comments made on your October 4th podcast. First of all, I can say that there is no evidence of a growing, quote, reunification, unquote, thank you for your clarity on the fact that the two were never unified to begin with, movement. Taiwanese people as a whole are opposed to unification with China. There is a small fringe group affiliated with organized crime groups who evidently get funding from Beijing as part of their united front warfare tactics, but they have little support from the general public, which views their politics and methods as distasteful. In fact, 80% of those surveyed oppose unification, and that number has shown a steady increase for years, as has the percentage of people who self-identify as Taiwanese as opposed to Chinese. Furthermore, 70% of Taiwanese polled would fight in the event of a Chinese invasion. This trend will no doubt accelerate as a result of the events in Hong Kong and Zhejiang. And as the youth who have grown up only knowing independence and democracy replace the older generation. Second, and contrary to popular belief, the CPP, Chinese Communist Party, leadership, mainly Chairman Xi, is not far-thinking and does not plan in centuries. Now, this is in response to an email I got from my friend Mike, who talked about the longer planning horizons of totalitarian regimes, in particular China. The email goes on. They are human beings with all of the incumbent short-sightedness, faults, and fragilities of human beings. Of being human in charge of a cutthroat political system and an increasingly corrupt oligarchy. The leadership obsessed with practicing their own ill-gotten personal gain, protecting their own ill-gotten personal gains, or just preserving their lives have surrounded themselves with people who will not provide critical feedback, and they are steering the ship with less and less understanding of the world as it is rather than how they would like it to be. If they were truly far-thinking, we would not see the way in which they have stifled economic reforms, feeding the economic bubble they have created, which will only implode in a far worse way down the road. We would also not see the hubris and the desperate, ham-fisted tactics alienating neighboring countries, engaging the people of Hong Kong, Zhejiang, and Taiwan, angering the U.S. or any other of the many ways China has shot itself in the foot rather than laying low and co-opting allies. I would venture to say that the leadership has no understanding or answer to its current problems and is flailing. Thirdly, China does not have time on its side, which was the contention of the previous email that I got last week. With an aging population caused by its one-child policy and zero immigration, there is a looming demographic time bomb. By 2023, China's population is predicted to peak, and the elderly population will reach 400 million, about a third of the population by 2035. Despite dubious reporting of 6% growth domestic product growth, analysis of consumer spending, energy consumption, import numbers, unemployment, and the number of failing banks and unpaid debt has indicated that the true number is closer to 2% or less. On top of this, there is the problem of pollution, desertification, poison water supplies, and African swine flu, which has killed more than half the pig stock and pushed up inflation. The leadership has enough problems to deal with. China has only a limited time window to make gains before their demographic dividend dries up, but is likely to grow old before it grows rich. The leadership is well aware of the issue, which means that we may see more conflict in the near future if there is discontent in the populace, and the leadership needs to protect that anger externally, project that anger externally, or feels this is a now or never situation. I apologize for the long-winded email, but I feel it's important for the U.S. defense community to understand the facts here. Much of the belief about the inevitable dominance of China and its wise leadership is a well-framed narrative, often surrounded by tinges of exotic orientalism and encouraged by heavy state propaganda. There are many more former administration officials and academics who continue to push this view, either because they built their careers on this narrative, they have been insulated from the real situation, and then in parentheses, you can only see so much from the four seasons in Shanghai, close parenthetical. That was funny. Or for personal gain. So it is hard to blame the general populace or even military ranks for believing it. However, us professionals, as professionals, the defense community must know better. There is a significant body of work by true subject matter experts. If you have not done so already, I would encourage you to check out books and interviews by Dr. Christopher Balding, Dr. J. Michael Cole, or General Retired Robert Spalding. Thank you for your time and keep up the great work. Sincerely, Eric. How about that? And then I thanked him for the email, and he responded, "Thanks for responding so quickly. Looking forward to listening to your shows, and I will definitely keep in touch. I think you could have any of the guests that I mentioned below, especially General Spalding. He just came out with a new book. It would be great." Well, I'm going to track down General Spalding, and you're going to hear about it. Yeah, so my weekend was fucking awesome. And I watched baseball. Yankees up 2-0. And the Yanks, there was a collective sucking noise coming out of Southern California last night. And that was the scared shitlessness of Dodger fans as they were down 2-0 in after five innings. And the Nationals going to bring in Patrick Corbin, one of their best pitchers, get them through the sixth and the seventh, and Dodgers have two innings to try to tie the ball game. It did not work out like that. But that did not, you heard the sucking noise. Because behind this game are coming two of the best pitchers in baseball for Washington. And I would say they're both better than the pitchers for the Dodgers. So I watched that last night as well. As I said, Yankees up 2-0, going to Minnesota, they'll play today. Again, if you're a baseball fan, days like today are rare. They come only once a year, and I believe all four teams are in action today. That is correct. At 10:05 Pacific time, Houston is in Tampa Bay for that game. At noon Pacific time, Atlanta and St. Louis play again in an elimination game. Tampa Bay's got to win or they're done. The Dodgers play in Washington, D.C. at 3:40, and that's an elimination game. If the Nats don't win, they're done. And the Yankees play an elimination game tonight starting at 5:40 in Minneapolis. So baseball all day today. So pretty exciting. Now, I'm sure I've opened the show later than I am today, but I had a great weekend. And then I would stay up late doing my accounting shit. Yeah, accounting. I hate it. But you know what? If you own a small business, you better understand it. Okay? You better understand it. And so it's that's what I was doing over the weekend. It's miserable. But I'm getting there. All right. United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Good morning to you. Dedicated to Ronnie Reyes, who introduced me to everybody down at Camp Pendleton that I just talked about. All right, and from Rich to the corpsmen I met, to the Marines who fought in at Quezon, who fought in Contien. Just phenomenal people who are part of Marine Corps history. And so it's just, you know, again, I always say there's no warmer place than in the company of Marines. And so it's pretty cool. So my thanks to Ronnie and Rich and everybody I saw there. And you're going to hear from some of them. And it's dedicated to them in that warmth, in that spirit. Now, here's one of the things, though, that that's constantly reaffirmed to me. You know, those things are great, but here's what post-traumatic winning does. What post-traumatic winning does is when they leave, it gives them a mission, and it gives them tools to execute the mission. Right, and so a lot of times when you go through that stuff, when you leave, you know, you know, you're very happy you went, but there's an emptiness that you feel. You don't need to feel that emptiness. Post-traumatic winning brings that to your life on a regular basis. So that just is deepened in me as I go to these things and I see the power of what I do, what the people that do post-traumatic winning with me do, what we do. So. This is dedicated to them. It's also dedicated to Corporal Matt Kiker, okay, who you're going to meet here in a few minutes. And it is one of the best interviews I've ever done in my life. And it's that way because of him. So, this is dedicated to all of that.
We are proud to play the battle. You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore. See, young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
If you don't love your Marine, then you really ought to get out. The only reason I stuck around that low-paying outfit for 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marine. And the infantry got its name, infantry, young soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about them deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda any time you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, PSC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. If you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah. You know, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country, we care about what happens to everyone. Brain Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You gotta win.
All right, time to check the weather here on, belatedly check the weather here on a Monday morning. But it's good, man, when there's that much stuff going on. It's awesome. Currently, it's cloudy and 76 in Quantico. It is partly cloudy and 82 at Camp Lejeune. Sunny and 70 at Marine Corps Base 29 Palms. Sunny and 64 at Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton. Camp Smith, dark cloudy 71. Okinawa's cooled off. dark, cloudy, and 75 in Ramadi, Iraq. Dark, cloudy, and 86. And in, so Ramadi's warmed up a little bit. In Lashkar Gah in Afghanistan, it is dark, clear, and 76. So Afghanistan cooled off a lot. The home of All Marine Radio, it is sunny and 64 degrees. Looking for a high of 81. Yeah, it was like 85 here yesterday. 81 and sun today. Sunny and 79 tomorrow. And on Wednesday, it is sunny and 73. That is a look at your weather here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio. Now, one other thing I wanted to talk to you about, but I'm not going to have time today. And that is, Ohio Man sent me an article about GE freezing pensions for 20,000 employees. General Electric Company said Monday it is freezing pensions of about 20,000 U.S. employees with salaried benefits as part of its plan to reduce its pension deficit by up to $8 billion. Okay, now you've heard me talk about pensions, quality of life in the United States, blah, blah, fucking blah, right? And let me start, it's part of this larger economic, see, I can be a dumbass, right? And I'm just going to show you my intellectual dexterity right here, right? So it's part of this problem that we have here in the United States. And the problem that we have here in the United States is the middle class is disappearing. What our parents knew as life, health care, retirement, and things like that, is vanishing. Okay? It's vanishing. And that's not a good thing because that middle class, that big fat middle class, that's what made the United States what it is. And so now you have corporations that have, by virtue of the internet, you have American corporations that have surpassed anything the country has ever known in terms of wealth. And you find more and more service sector jobs that historically in the United States have not paid great money. They've not had great benefits. But if that is the sector of the jobs in this country that are growing, and if the consequence of that is the middle class is disappearing, which endangers American democracy, now this is going to be this is going to be heretical, right? Heretical. Is that why a $15, a $20 minimum wage is important? Is that why there needs to be greater requirements on companies relative to pensions? That the 401k needs to be tweaked, that it isn't it isn't capped at what, 15% or whatever the hell you can put in there. And that the match is more significant. That if you, they will match you dollar for dollar or $2 for dollar. So that American, workers can retire. So that their quality of life, because when I think about these things, when I discuss these things, the thing that comes into my head was, why Theodore Roosevelt enacted the legislation that he enacted. And I think it's really interesting. In Edmund Morris's book, about Theodore Roosevelt, in the first volume, he talks about Roosevelt on the train. I've talked about this before, but going through the slums of the East Coast as he moved from Buffalo down to New York City down to Washington, D.C., he had already been sworn in as the president in Buffalo, so as he's, assuming the duties of the president of the United States, and he had watched what happened in Europe and the class system that had been built up in Europe. And so one of Roosevelt's great motivating forces, in fact, that you see in as he reforms labor, child labor laws, the 8-hour workday, all these things that come to this country, right, are an effort to create a large middle class. And that is what provides stability. That is what provides opportunity. And so, you know, maybe, you know, if it's the service sector that needs to be reformed, then maybe, and that's the jobs our economy has, then we should all pay extra for it. And that the tilting of our economy has to get tilted back towards the worker. Because it's stories like this, right, that destroy the middle class. And the middle class has been under assault, in particular, as we have exported, you know, our great paying, you know, jobs in factories, you know, from the United States to the rest of the planet. Right? This whole fair trade thing, that's a bunch of bullshit. Right? So let me just read you a little bit. General Electric Company said Monday it's freezing the pensions of about 20,000 U.S. employees with salaried benefits as part of its plan to reduce its pension deficit by up to $8 billion. Now, there's a lot of things that GE can do. But this is what they chose to do. GE said it's also freezing supplementary pension benefits for about 700 employees and offering a limited-time lump sum payment option to about 100,000 former employees who have yet started their monthly pension payments. The company said there is no change for GE retirees already collecting pension benefits or employees with production benefits. I don't know what that is. GE's pension plan has been closed to new entrants since 2012. Effective January 1, 2021, affected employees won't accrue additional benefits or make employee contributions to the pension plan. Starting the same date, GE said it would contribute 3% of eligible compensation to employee 401k plans and provide matching contributions of 50% on up to 8% of eligible compensation. In addition to reducing the pension benefit by $5 billion, to $8 billion, GE said it expects to reduce net debt by $4 million to $6 billion. All in an effort to reduce GE to a position of strength. And how are they going to do that? They're going to do it on the ass of their workers. That's a problem. That's a problem throughout the country. So, again, we're seeing more and more wealth consolidated in fewer and fewer hands because of the power of the Internet. And who pays for it? The American worker. So, again, it's one of the fundamental problems in our economy today. And then how does a small business deal with that? Right? Because small businesses, they're the ones that, you know, that really make it go. Okay. I want to do some news headlines, and then I'm going to get out of the way, and you're going to hear Matt Kuiker. So, real quick, some news headlines. Top Marine story is the Commandant made an appearance at the Heritage Foundation last week. He was on Heritage Foundation for about an hour and 27 minutes. So you might hear that this week, right? You might hear that this week. I think you're going to hear an interview I did, an on-discipline interview tomorrow with General Zinni. So I think you're going to hear that tomorrow. And then maybe you'll hear this on Wednesday, right? But in this thing, General Berger says Marines are not optimized for the next great power fight. And he talks about this is how the Corps needs to change. So that's pretty interesting. Another story that I saw in Marine Corps Times is young vet unemployment up again in September. What? So the nation just hit a 50-year low in unemployment, and young veteran unemployment is up? Like, what the fuck? So this 1% that serves, you can't get out and get a job. That's bullshit. And again, to me, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy of victimhood. Oh, it's so hard to get out. Oh, really? You think it's fucking hard to get out? How about working your ass is just as hard to get out as you did to get in. You think you're just going to walk up and hand somebody a fucking resume? Or let me see, I'm going to go live where I want to live, and then I'm going to go look for a job. How about you go find a place that'll hire your ass, go work there for a couple years, and then transfer when you have something on your resume? Again, it's unbelievable to me. Officials from the Bureau of Labor Statistics said the number of post-9/11 era veterans filing for unemployment benefits rose in September, pushing the rate to 4.5%. It's the highest that figure has been since early 2018, and the fifth time in the last 6 months the figure has increased since the young veteran unemployment rate hit a historic low of 1.7% in April. So now, is that a seasonal? Where are the footnotes? Unemployment experts have cautioned against focusing too closely on monthly changes in unemployment for subgroups within the Department of Labor. All right. Even with the increases, the mostly post-9/11 numbers are still significantly below figures from 2 years ago when the rates topped 4.5%. So, again, my memo to young Marines is work as hard to get out as you did to get in. If you do that, you'll be all right. If you're going to sit on your ass and do the minimum and think somebody's going to hire you because you're a veteran, you're full of shit. They won't. All right, one story from U.S. Naval Institute News where they do hard news. U.S. officials confirm North Korean submarine launched ballistic missile test. Now, this story was around, what, a week or so ago? There was speculation. The Democratic People's Republic of Korea test-fired what it claimed was a new type of submarine-launched ballistic missile, though Pentagon officials and other experts say there's a long way to go before North Korea has a credible sea-based nuclear deterrent. The Academy of Defense Science of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea succeeded in test-firing the new sea-launched ballistic missile in the waters off Wonsan Bay of the East Sea of Korea on Wednesday morning of last week, according to an account posted by the North Korean-based state-run Korea Central News Agency. The new missile type wasn't fired from a submarine, according to the Department of Defense. The Pentagon officials are still analyzing the launch data available to determine the type of missile fired, but for now do not think it was an intercontinental missile. Quote, we assess it was a short to medium range ballistic missile, said Air Force Captain Patrick Ryder, a joint staff spokesman. We have no indication that it was launched from a submarine, but rather a sea-based platform. Now, the headline says the exact opposite, though. So, the statement from the spokesman for the Joint Chiefs, or the Joint Staff, we have no indication that it was launched from a submarine, but rather a sea-based platform. So, the headline should read, Memo to USNI, Memo to USNI, right? Correct the headline. U.S. officials confirm North Korea launched a sea-based ballistic missile. All right. Early bird, top five stories. One, U.S. troops start pullout along Turkey's border in Syria. And again, the shit show that is on the eastern side of the Potomac has now migrated across the Potomac to the Pentagon. You know? Bullshit. Number two, North Korea. No more talks until the U.S. ends its hostile policy. Again, the world according to GARP there, as always. Number three, report. CO forced minions to write his fitness report, right, and gave secretary a panic attack. Now, that's one of the top five stories in Early Bird. This is the clickbait, right, the DOD clickbait. We used to do this with the safety report. That used to come out monthly and before there was any internet, right, there would be a naval message format, the safety mishap report that would detail the stupid shit that went on all over the Department of the Navy. It was hilarious to read. Now, that was, I guess, clickbait of its time. Now it's, this is the stupid shit that some 05 lieutenant colonel commander did to get fired. And I guess everybody reads it. But it's kind of, it's stupid shit. Number four, U.S. offering $5 million bounty for attackers responsible for the deadly Nizar attack that killed four U.S. soldiers. Number five, Taliban meet U.S. peace envoy for the first time since the Trump administration pronounced the deal was dead. So now, if they just cool out their attacks long enough to cut a deal, then the United States will cut a deal and say, hey, we're out of here. Because the election's coming up, and bullet points in the election are going to be, doesn't matter if we did the right thing, I got our ass out of here, and I got our ass out of here. So look for another stupid event to happen in Afghanistan so we can un-ass that son of a bitch. Yeah. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear Matt Kuiker. And let me tell you, do not touch your do not touch your radio dial. Sit there, and you're going to hear the story of an incredible young man who, from the age of 9, probably before that, has lived some pretty difficult shit. And you're going to hear his story. You're going to hear his story, and it's a great story. And I hope it inspires you, and I hope it inspires you to help other people. I hope it inspires you to embrace more fully post-traumatic winning and look for opportunities on a daily basis to touch people's lives, because I mean, it's amazing. It is, honestly, it's amazing. And I will tell you what, it is, young people today live in an empty, disconnected world. And they have a cell phone, which doesn't connect them to shit or anybody. It means that you can send text, you can message when you want to, but messaging isn't communication. Messaging isn't somebody giving a shit about you. Messaging isn't any of that. Okay? That's not what it is. And they live increasingly isolated. They don't know how to be on teams. And that's the great opportunity that the Marine Corps has and the DOD has. We're going to show you how to be on a team. We're going to show you how to give. We're going to show you how to look out for each other. We're going to show you what this is all about. Now, and I go back to I knew that stuff, right? So when you hazed me and made me do stupid shit, whether it was the shellback ceremony or any of this other stupid shit we did, you know, it was not a big deal. We took all that shit in stride because I think most of us knew how to be on teams. The other part of it is that there wasn't this, when I saw it, there wasn't this punitive, sadistic, stupid fuck bullshit that went on. Or there would have been a fight. There would have been a fight. And let me tell you, that's one of the consequences of saying, hey, nobody can fight. I think it's important to fight. I think that, especially for young guys, you got to learn how to fight. And you got to learn that when somebody fucks with you, there's one way to stop it, and that's throw a punch. Don't be afraid to fight for yourself. But what we've done by discouraging fighting is we've increased this verbal and other bullshit bullying. I say bring back fighting. Yeah, let them fight in the parking lot. Let them fight at recess. Don't expel them. That's not the worst thing that's going to happen. Right? I don't know anybody who committed suicide after they got into a fist fight. Can't think of somebody who did it. Now, I'm sure there's probably out there. People send me email or whatever. But the great opportunity is to connect them. But I don't know if we're doing that, man. And I'll tell you what, I think the DOD is in way worse shape than anybody thinks it is. I think if you're relatively senior, you know, in the DOD, and you go around the world and you look, it looks the same. The uniforms are the same. The ships look the same. The tanks look alike. But what's going on inside of that? comes from our current culture, and it ain't good. And the DOD has to be the agent for change. And you know what's in the center of all that? Discipline. Discipline and selflessness. So, Matt Kuiker is a great example of this. And so don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it. The one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.